video producer, Dean Hoffmeyer, and I came to him with the idea, and he said, that's great, don't tell anybody. So we made the first one, and we put it up, and people found out we were going to do it 5 minutes before it started when the link went on the website, because we didn't know. This whole thing could have gone up in flames very quickly. And right. Then after the video, our publisher marches in, just steaming mad, and he says, why did you not tell us about this? And Dean said, well, we didn't think it'd be any good. You know, how was he? That was great. We should have told people about it. They would have wanted to watch it. I said, that's perfect. That's good. We can do that going forward. Yes. Now that we're walking and not crawling, we, you know, absolutely. We promote it every year now, and it's a thing people look forward to. We get politicians on. It's a great chance to interview people outside of the traditional print format. People are willing to come on the live show because they know people are watching it and reacting in real time. And you know, I think that makes it easy to get guests and to get people who might be hesitant to return our call, you know, the mayor, you know, or politicians are maybe more willing to do it in that format. So it's turned into a great thing.
Welcome to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Town News. Town News delivers solutions, services, and guidance empowering local media organizations to thrive in an ever-changing digital world. Contact Town News today to learn more how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at townnews.com.
Welcome back to season two of the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. I am excited to get this project going again. This is one of my favorite projects that I get to do every year, and that is talk to people in our news industry all around the country. I'm joined today with Chris Coates, the executive editor, and Michael Phillips, the senior editor from the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Welcome, guys.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Well, there are two reasons that I really want you guys in. And as usual, it's because there's something I'm curious about and I want to know how it works. But also, you seem to have found a way to bring some of your, what do we call them, legacy subscribers, your print readers into the digital fold, because more and more of our lives are going there. That's where we're finding our revenue. That's where we're finding more of our audience as we keep trying to push the news out. And selfishly, as a guy who made his bones as a page designer long, long ago, I'm curious about the e-editions and how that, you know, keeps the page designers relevant. But it also seems to be a pretty good tool for you to bring some of those print readers over into the digital world as well. Am I the only one who had some hesitancy when I first heard about e-editions?
Well, I think for a long time, they were just kind of static. They were just digital replicas of the print edition, and there's a lot of value in there, and I can talk about that. But now, you know, the e-edition for us through Town News opens up all these other digital avenues. So there's a way to integrate our video and links to our other assets, our multimedia. So we see it as really a bridge between the traditional print reader and this new digital landscape, because we have so much content that we produce every day. We say it a lot that we're far more than a newspaper, and frankly, we're far more than just a website at this point. So it's an important tool for us.
I think it's a great opportunity to retain a lot of what makes the newspaper great, which is our curation of the news. And not to pretend like we're the be-all end-all of deciding what news is, but you look at a newspaper, the front page stories are the most important. Smaller stories on the inside are less important. You don't get that as much online. You think about a Facebook feed or a Twitter feed, it's all the same. You know, you got Queen Elizabeth dies, and then you got watches touchdown from a football game, screams 40 cents, I'll let you, nothing's telling you what matters and what doesn't matter the same way as placement in a newspaper does every day. So it's a great opportunity to bring that into the digital world and tell folks, this is what we think is important today and that you'll want to read.
You know, that's an interesting point. And I hadn't really thought about that like weight given to stories is kind of taken out of our hands, because now it's really based on the algorithm of the user, of the reader. What are they typically looking for? What are they usually going to read? And it takes that little bit of control. And I think it's okay to say we are curators of the news, and we do get to decide but you know, that's what we're trained to do too, right? We're trained to find the important things for the communities or audiences we cover. Is this really helpful to you to be able to take that little bit of control, I guess, over the weight?
Well, I think it's so baked into our DNA in newsrooms. You know, like, we want it, the hierarchy of the news, the important news of the day. And, you know, we are a digital first newsroom. We talk about digital all day, but we also put out a print product, and we also talk about the print product. And it's a natural kind of extension of that, is to have those two worlds merge in this way.
So let's get in a little bit to how you are using that to be the bridge, to change some of those customers that have only been reading for a long time and bring them in. How is that working? What's your gateway?
Sure. So I should say, you know, it's all about exposure. It's all about getting people down the subscription funnel. But more importantly, all of this access for us, all of the print and digital material, it's all bundled in our subscriptions. So that's a little bit different than maybe other properties and other companies where, you know, you might have a digital one vertical and then a print vertical. When you buy a subscription to our site, you get, you know, digital included. So that's really, really important. The Richmond e-edition was launched, I asked around, it was launched in 2008. And, you know, a lot of those early editions of that era, this was all pre-iPad. It was just a digital version of the printed page, and very, very static, but it did develop a very loyal audience. And there's kind of, early on, there were two groups we identified. One were people who were snowbirds and maybe not in the market. They might have a second house or something like that, but they still wanted the, you know, print replica of their hometown newspaper. And then if there were ever delivery issues or weather issues or anything like that,
There's never delivery issues. What are you talking about?
It was always very, very helpful to say, okay, you know, we might be late with getting it to your doorstep, or, you know, doorstep, it'll get there eventually. But here's this e-edition. And for a long time, those were the two main things we used it for. And now we've kind of opened this new door to attracting digital readers. And we have QR codes that we put in the paper, same idea, where people can aim their smartphone. And it, we say, you know, if you want to see a video with the story, if you want to see a photo gallery, or do you want to see the PDF of the document that we're talking about in the story, aim your phone at this QR code and it'll open up. So, you know, we're trying, the game here is that we are trying to attract audience on every possible front we can. And we're going to use every tool we can, and QR codes and e-editions are a huge part of that.
How's the traffic on those QR codes and things from your print to the digital pieces? That's interesting.
Michael, we launched those in, when was that, February?
Earlier this year, March of this year. Yeah.
And I am anxious to see a full traffic report on where all that traffic's going. But I can tell you, you know, just from a journalism standpoint, and it's, you know, all this is very important for audience growth and everything, but it really does come down to journalism. That's why we got into this business. And so, you know, for me, it adds a kind of a storytelling component that wasn't there before. We can show our work. We can bring a video to, you know, if you're doing a personality profile, it's very natural to have a video. It adds a whole different kind of storytelling piece to this that's, I think, really, really important.
Well, that was going to be my next question, because, you know, at the base of everything we do, we're storytellers. We're telling the stories of the communities we cover. When you bring in, you're a reporter now, you're an editor, and you look at these things and you see all of those opportunities to really tell the story and to use different tools to do it. Because, I mean, how many times have you written a feature and you think to yourself as you're writing, I wish people could have watched this interview?
Right, right. It brings a whole different, it's a whole new level of storytelling. Michael and I just got off a Zoom call about our election night coverage. We have a TV studio here in the newsroom, or maybe the newsroom's in the TV studio, depending on how you see it. But, you know, we're going to have live election coverage that we're going to beam to all of our Lee Enterprises papers in Virginia. Michael will anchor it, and we'll have reporters who come on and talk about the election results. It'll be a broadcast. That was not something that we did 20 years ago. It didn't even enter our minds, but the technology.
No, we would have thrown things at you if you suggested it.
Right. but now it's a way to reach, you know, a whole new group of people, to have the whole state watching our broadcast. No pressure, Michael. It's going to be great. I'm really excited. So that's where we're
going. Michael, I'm going to ask you, you're going to, I don't know if that was breaking news to you. Did you know you were going to be the host?
He was on the meeting.
This will be our third year doing it. And, you know, the audience has grown every year as people learn to tune in for it. And it's the perfect match. You know, you mentioned we're storytellers. How do you best tell the story? And on an election night anymore, the story is not best told with a printed newspaper. It's an evolving story. It's a story that goes late into the night because they're counting these absentee ballots now. I mean, that's a new wrinkle on this. It's the best way to get the information to the audience. And I love to the QR code point. I mean, our photographers go out, get amazing stuff. One photo makes the newspaper. Maybe we got one in black and white and two columns inside. The chance to let their work shine a little bit more. You know, I think it's a win for everybody.
Let me ask you, because storytelling and different ways to tell the story. You said this is your three, right, of hosting this kind of thing. Do you have was getting on and hosting a, you know, a video podcast or a TV thing, was that in your arsenal already, or is that something you've had to figure out?
We figured it out along the way. I've done a little bit of, you know, I've done college TV and college media, and, you know, done a little radio along the way, but it was brand new. And so our video producer, Dean Hoffmeyer, and I came to him with the idea, and he said, "That's great. Don't tell anybody." So we made the first one, and we put it up, and people found out we were going to do it 5 minutes before it started when the link went on the website, because we didn't know this whole thing could have gone up in flames very quickly. And then after the video, our publisher marches in just steaming mad, and he says, "Why did you not tell us about this?" And Dean said, "Well, we didn't think it'd be any good. You know, how was he?" "That was great. We should have told people about it. They would have wanted to watch it." I said, "That's perfect. That's good. We can do that going forward." "Yes. Now that we're walking and not crawling, we, you know, absolutely. We promote it every year now, and it's a thing people look forward to. We get politicians on. It's a great chance to interview people outside of the traditional print format. People are willing to come on the live show because they know people are watching it and reacting in real time. And you know, I think that makes it easy to get guests and to get people who might be hesitant to return our call, you know, the mayor, you know, or politicians are maybe more willing to do it in that format. So it's turned into a great thing.
And, you know, we have incredible technology here, but, you know, you could do this over Zoom theoretically. I mean, there is a way to, for even smaller newsrooms to leverage, you know, all of it. Maybe that's something that I've said this before, that out of COVID, we learned how to use video conferencing technology every day. We're comfortable with it. It's not that crazy to talk to a screen and do an interview. So, you know, that's how we are kind of structuring this whole thing.
I'm curious, as you've learned to do this on the go, and it's something I did too. I never thought I'd get into this kind of thing, but learning, you know, interviewing this way is different than when you have your notepad and you can bounce around as much as you want. But it's been a really cool style of storytelling to learn how to do. Have you enjoyed that process of kind of relearning a new way?
I have. I find it fascinating. And, you know, when we talk about interviewing expert sources and you say, well, put them on Zoom and record the interview, that's a good asset for us to have. Like we were talking about earlier, it's just another storytelling kind of avenue.
Michael, it frees up what you're able to do with the interview as well. It frees up that you can, you know, slice it into a video. You can still use it for print. You can add graphics. You can add photos. You know, our team, our Lee team has been making some phenomenal interactive graphics recently. I know Chris, that team, and just when you do a story and you give somebody a second way to absorb the story, I mean, I just think it increases the value of the subscription so much. We're not just going to give you the words. We'll give you the words. We're very good at that. But we're also going to give you a chart, a map, whatever it might be that, you know, I challenge my team to think up a good idea and we'll figure out how to do it. We'll reverse engineer how to do it. Like, just dream up how you want to present the story. Then we'll work backwards from there, because it does these days, like, our ability to present the information is just more and more limitless.
I think too, it's made us better. I mean, you know, I'm going to assume you both have been doing this for a long time. And there's nothing worse than, come election season, the candidate Q&As, right? I mean, you're asking the same questions. You know the answers you're going to get before you send them out. But I know for my little paper that I have in my community, I flipped it, and I still do the Q&As because you kind of have to. But now being able to do one-on-one candidate interviews with like this, it gives you more of an opportunity to really dig in and show the community who the candidates are. I feel like the stories are better because there's different ways to present.
Right. I think, you know, the old human beings having emotions is the key. And however we, you know, we don't want just kind of standard answers. We want emotion. And so a lot of these things that we're talking about are getting at that idea of video and conveying human emotion.
What are some other things you're doing, I guess to better tell your stories?
So we are very lucky in Richmond that we have a full-time meteorologist in our newsroom. Some other Lee markets have that.
How did that happen?
Yeah, weather's a big deal. Weather is a big deal to us. It's a big investment, but it's very, very important. So, you know, was that 2 weeks ago, the hurricane last week? It's all blur. You know, that was a big deal.
Post-COVID time doesn't matter anymore.
Space and time. That was a big deal on the East Coast. You know, we were for a while there, it was not looking great. And so we had the meteorologist file a lot of stories, lots of videos. He can do it from home, but weather is a big deal for us. So we've made a big investment in that. He also does a football weathercast as well, which is very helpful for all the football fans.
I bet people love that.
I'll go deeper on the meteorologist because, I mean, this is a great example of us being forward-looking and thinking outside the newspaper box. You don't need a meteorologist at a print newspaper. You really just don't. But as we talk about who are our competitors over the next 10 years, I think you have to acknowledge the local television stations, the local radio stations are absolutely our competitors for online eyeballs. And it would be irresponsible of us not to take them on head on and establish ourselves as the preeminent news in Richmond. And so part of that is we offer a weather forecast. We offer a weather forecast by video, by online post. And he does great stuff. I mean, he'll do deeps on climate change as well that are, you know, like giving you far more than just here's the forecast for tomorrow. And I think really show that we can put some reporting chops behind what's traditionally kind of a, you know, maybe a fluffier part of the broadcast in local TV. But, you know, I would put him up against what the TV stations are doing. And so it's one less reason why you would want to go to the TV station to get your news. If we're giving you everything you need, stick with, you know, as you go online, you've got your websites, you got your places you visit, you got your places you read. We want to be all encompassing. If it's happening in Richmond, we want you to think of us to go to for it.
And when there's breaking news, when there's breaking weather, you know, serious storms, he goes into action and we get a live broadcast up in real time as it's happening. And that's, I think it's incredibly important for our readership to have that tool available. So it's been great.
I have not heard of that outside of newsrooms that are, you know, already combined, where it's a paper and a TV station already combined, but that's a fantastic tool for you guys to have around.
Yeah. Lee Enterprises has one in Atlantic City, there's one in the Midwest for our properties,
Tulsa.
And then there's one in Tulsa as well, who covers our properties out there. So, but Richard was the first one, so we're proud of that.
He's, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he's top five in page views in the newsroom for sure. People have really responded.
Is that something that you are doing throughout all of your news coverage, though, that it's just, you know, you can hop online and do some video stories, you can you can record them and post them later. I mean, how important is it? I feel like it's cliche to talk about, but I don't know that how seriously we talk about it, that you've got to tell that story every way you can.
Yeah. I mean, we have so many tools available to us. I mean, video is the most obvious one, but we have two data reporters who are terrific. They do really great work, and they create embeds and, you know, whenever there's any amount of any data story, we always lean on them to give us something to embed into the story. So, yeah, I mean, it's on all fronts. And sports, I mean, sports does a terrific job on the digital front as well. So, yeah, we're using all
Let's be fair. The hardest workers in every newsroom are the sports people. I mean,
yes,
exactly. It's election night
every
night.
Every
it's always election night for the sports people.
Get them some pizza.
That's right. I get the feeling you started there as well.
I do, absolutely, yes. We have our high school football reporter does a player of the week poll. We put it up on Saturday after all the high school games are over, solicits, you know, here were the 6-7 best performances of the week. Come vote on who the player of the week is. There's no prize. There's no trophy. It's purely bragging rights, and we'll print your name in the paper as a player of the week. And it usually takes 3,000 votes to win player of the week each week in high school football. I think it's harder to win than the local school board. Just that little tweet. We could never do that in the printed newspaper. But that engagement, you put the poll up, it's available right away. People engage, people send it around. Just reminds people, come on over. We got it all.
That's right. That's right. Are you using polls more often? I'm always hit and miss. My own experience with polls and stories and different things like that is I'll get a few out and the response will be great. And then I'll do it again because I want to ride that wave. And it's like nothing.
And it's great as like a fun thing. But I always want to be conscious too of, like, you know, we're the experts here. Like, what do you think? Like, you know, weigh in on, like, hey, like, do you want Shake Shack to come to town or whatever? Like, you know, but I'm always hesitant to wade into on, like, big political stories. Like, hey, we got reporters who are here finding out the truth. Like, I don't want to diminish what they're bringing to the table here. But sports is the perfect venue, as you know, to play with that and have some fun. We can lean into a sports rivalry, you know, and hopefully not make people too mad.
Right. Never a shortage of content when it comes to those.
The News Nirvana podcast is brought to you by Town News, the creators of Audience Plus. Audience Plus replaces your old school one size fits all paywall with a smarter metering solution that targets visitors with custom offers, converting drive-bys into paying subscribers. You can learn more at townnews.com/audience.
You brought up polls and doing the political stuff, and it makes me curious a little bit. I think I'm always curious about what other communities and other papers are doing with the last couple of election cycles. The great thing I've always said, the great thing about covering local elections is you get away from a lot of the other stuff, right? And you're just focused on people running for office to make your local area better. I feel a lot of that bleeding over, and it's gotten harder to cover, I think, or at least stranger to cover. Have you noticed that too, that sometimes the national and state stuff is just bleeding into your local spheres?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we Virginia elected a new governor not that long ago, and, you know, that was a very heated race. We're the state capital, so, I mean, politics is kind of one of our industries. It's one of our Fortune 100 companies. So it gets a lot of attention, you know, anything about state politics. And we have an absolutely terrific team covering state politics. And so for this election, it's pretty light on local issues. And we're keeping an eye on some statewide, contests across the state, but it's pretty light this cycle. I was not here for the last election. So, Michael, how did we cover the last one?
Yeah, Virginia's great because we do the state house elections in odd numbered years and the national elections in the even numbered years. So every year is an election year of significance. And so, yes, Glenn Youngkin won the race for governor. And I think one of the trends, I don't know if other people are seeing this, but at least in our neck of the woods, he won by making the election national. You know, so a lot of the Virginia centric issues he ignored, and he came in and hit the national Republican talking points on school choice and, you know, all tax cuts and, you know, all the things that you say to win the presidency or a Senate seat. You know, he kind of came in and hit those in the gubernatorial race. So I think I see an increasing trend where, you know, all politics are local used to be the saying. It sure feels like all politics are national now, where you've got school board races where they're running on critical race theory and they're running on, right, you know, these national level forums. You say, well, that's not what you do. But it's what people are exposed to. I mean, people are watching Fox News or MSNBC for 2-3 hours every night. I mean, they're hearing far more of the national issues than they're consuming the local issues. And I think we're seeing that reflected in the local races.
How are you as the local paper then? And I mean, you are in the Capitol, you're covering that stuff too, but how are you responding to that? You talked earlier, you just said, you know, our job is to report the truth, is to find the truth in that and to keep people accountable. So how are you responding then, you know, if you've got a school board race where they're bringing those national talking points into it and that's not what the local school board does. So how are you responding to that in your coverage? And maybe are you trying to ask the questions to get people to respond differently, or what do you think your role is there?
Yeah, and we're really lucky to have a Pulitzer Prize winning columnist. Michael Paul Williams is our Metro columnist, to where, you know, I know not a lot of smaller newspapers don't have that luxury of having a full-time columnist. And I just think it's so essential to what we do because it frees the reporters up to report and not feel like if I don't call this truth out, nobody will. You've got somebody coming right behind you, backing you up, who's going to bring a hammer and swing a hammer and say, that's nonsense. So I think it allows you to stay in your reporting lane a little more, where you can know, like, hey, we've got a columnist. He's going to call this out. I don't need to let it seep into my copy.
Yeah, that's a nice tool to have, is to have that extra voice, that their job is to do that. But, you know, I'm still curious, because maybe not even saying it as a column, though, is sometimes just as important to say it in the reporting, or at least to ask the question to get those things out and to say, you know, I feel like a lot of times my job is to, I want to make sure that the people running for office are talking about the right things, right, no matter what side they're on. If we want to get into the both sides, which is a whole other, we could do like 3 episodes just on that. But I still feel like it's, you know, holding accountable is also making sure the right conversations are being had. Do you feel kind of the same way, or is that different?
Well, no, I think, you know, accountability journalism, watchdog journalism, and everything you're talking about is one of our core missions. So, you know, the reporters have to juggle that. That's a challenge every day.
Absolutely.
As a former reporter, I can tell you it's a challenge every day. And so, you know, I think they go in seeking the truth, and it's not always easy, but that's kind of the situation we're in right now.
Is that kind of the same, Michael?
Yeah, it's, you know, we have the power to ask the questions that we want to ask, which is awesome. You know, the average citizen doesn't get that, and that is a great responsibility we take on. I think it's very important to let the reporters know, and certainly we got former reporters here in the room, that just because something is trending or hot or being talked about on CNN does not mean that's the question you need to ask at the mayoral press conference. That, you know, our community has trusted us with their $14.99 a month, that we're going to use that to do the right civic thing and ask the right questions and hold people accountable, and not just chase whatever happens to be trending that morning.
I want to shift gears just a little bit. We glanced toward this a little bit, but all of these different tools we've been talking about and the different ways of telling the stories and engaging, are you using some of those too to also get a little bit more engagement from your readers? And I think that's the, you know, that's like the weird part of the news now, is, you know, I know you guys are in the newsroom, but the wall between business and news is very, very thin now. It's not the brick and mortar it used to be, because our audiences now are a revenue source as much as they are just the audience we're trying to serve. Are you using these tools some to try to engage them and get their involvement and feedback as well? Is it working?
Well, I mean, engagement, what do you consider engagement? I guess.
Well, I guess I'm glad that you kind of made me get specific on that. For this, I mean, you know, getting them to comment, to be a part of what's going back and forth. And I think that's something we've all struggled, I guess, from the business side. We're trying to figure that out a little bit. But I'm curious if the tools that we've been talking about, you're using them for that.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, during COVID, we used to have a whole slate of events, community engagement events and business right. events and, you know, all, I mean, it was a whole thing. And that all went away. So we're because of COVID. So we're trying to rebuild that bit by bit. And, you know, that's what you want is an engaged citizenry, but you also want an engaged reader base. And yeah, all these tools fit together. You know, we had an event in, when was that? In April? It was a business leaders event. And, you know, we streamed, it was heavy on video. We flooded the zone in print and digital. So, I mean, all these things kind of work in tandem together. They also work in tandem to get people to become digital subscribers. And that's really, really important that we want, you know, people who just kind of check us out once in a while on social, you're casual about it. We want them to get sign up for a newsletter, and then we would love for them to subscribe and support our work. So, you know, the subscription funnel is very, very, very important. So everything's very important, but that's really important.
Go ahead.
Yeah, getting subscribers is both our goal and the business side's goal. And if there's a better way, you know, you talk about wanting people to come to the site more often, spend more time on the site, consume more things. And if there's a better way to do that than quality content, I'm unaware of it. Like, you know, when we talk, yeah, there are people who want to take shortcuts. And we've all come across those people. You know, what if we do this to goose up the page views or, you know, do this? But if there's anything other than quality content that draws repeat engagement, you can win the quarter, you can win the week, win the day, but you won't win permanently. And Chris and I are too young to retire. We got to hang on to these people for a few years here. We got kids who are not in college. We got to hang on to these readers for a little while, and we need them to keep renewing their subscriptions and their memberships. And in my opinion, and I'll tell this to our business people, the only way to accomplish that is with routinely producing quality content. You know, that's the number one way to get people on board and keep them on board. And now within that, you got a number of fascinating, our tech people just do a fascinating job of when do you have people hit the paywall? What offers, you know, 6 months for a dollar, you know, a year for a dollar, 10 days for a dollar. Like, you know, I know that the tech people throw all these things against the wall and come back with the numbers and optimize that. I'm really glad they're there. And I'm really, they're much smarter than me. And obviously our digital speaks for itself in terms of what they've been able to accomplish. I just keep my head down and focus on my part, which is if we don't have quality content, they're going to bounce. We have to give them something they want to read every single day.
Go ahead.
Well, I think you're right. You know, the following the trends does a good job every once in a while of bringing people in. But if you're not putting out quality, consistent content, then they're not staying.
It's this very delicate mix of, you know, urgency and breaking news, but also content that brings people back. And, you know, you need to calibrate that all the time to get the most readers you can. So we do a great job of figuring out that balance, I think.
Do you think this is working? Are you seeing more subscribers happen?
Yeah, our digital subscription numbers are strong. You know, our page views are strong. Yeah, and I'm proud of the work too. And so we're not, as Michael just said, we're not doing it through, you know, crazy, you know, we're not doing it through tricks. We're doing it through legit work. We're doing it by filing FOIAs. We're doing it by, you know, pushing hard on stories. We're doing it by exclusives. And that's how to do it. That's the right way to go about this challenge that we have.
Chris has a great breakdown. Break it down. You don't want the middle. You want like the deep dives, and you want the quick posts. I mean,
if you go into your CMS, you know, there are like all these stories that are about 14 inches that probably don't do much with digital audience. You know, you want to either do something fast and tight and, you know, really, really get it out there quickly, or you want to go long and you want to do something with some sophistication, some nuance. I call it the muddy middle is what that 14 inch stone is. But, you know, I think we're really blessed. We live in a really incredible community with a great brewery scene, great food scene, and a sports scene, and we just have to figure out how to kind of aim our resources and aim our brain power at how to get that audience and how to grow the brand, as they say.
I think looking at the differences between, you know, the quick hit pieces you were talking about and those in depth, and you guys will remember, I'm assuming we're all around the same age and time in the business. I mean, there were probably 10, 15, maybe even 20 years where right shorter, right tighter, right shorter, right tighter. I mean, like nobody has – audiences don't have the patience for the long-form journalism anymore. But I feel like we're realizing we were wrong and that all of these different tools we've been talking about and things that work together to tell the stories, we realize we can dive deeper into a lot of these stories and people will consume it.
I think it's a balancing act of, you know, when there's breaking news, we need to jump on breaking news. When there's, you know, things that are developing, we need to write short and get it out the door. I mean, our audience expects that. And everyone's looking at their phones all the time. We need to get that out. But in terms of longevity, in terms of the importance of growing the brand, it's through quality journalism of substance. And that's where I think we're at right now.
I want to, as we start wrapping things up here, I want to do something, and I try to remember to do this whenever I get people from the editorial side on. I want to give you some time, brag a little bit. What are some good pieces that you guys have produced, or maybe something exciting you're working on? I like to give people an opportunity, brag a little bit about your team and your product and something you've been doing.
Michael, you go first.
I'd love to go first because I'm always ready to brag. You heard me brag about our player of the week poll high school level earlier, which is just like, you know, just let's just find 10,000 page views out of nowhere just by getting beat about high school football.
You know, if you've got that silver bullet in your holster, you can just spread that around to everybody. We all want that.
I love it. We scooped the TV stations earlier this year on a video of the police put out a press release. They had a motorcyclist had run over a policeman, and we went out and we got video from somebody who was watching it from a storefront. And the policeman actually like jumped in the path of the motorcycle, but it was like your classic TV video that they just play all day. So super, super proud of them for landing that ahead of the TV stations, drawing eyeballs in. We had an elementary school caught on fire late one night here. It was about midnight. When the school caught on fire. So after even our business hours, you know, we shut the paper down at 10:30 and everybody goes home. But we had three people who heard about it, jumped up, started working. One of our editors stayed up all night, listened to the fire dispatch calls. And, you know, the fire department sent out their press release, did not mention that the alarm went off at the school at 10 o'clock. They had come by, didn't see anything, couldn't get into the school, so they just left. And then an hour later, the whole thing was ablaze. And they left. And so we pushed out, and we changed the community narrative on what happened because of that information that we pulled. Just an incredible piece of reporting that took, you know, it's a job. They certainly have their personal time as well, but it's a calling for a lot of folks too. And to have that passion when a big story happens to dive into it all night and get the nugget and force the fire department to fess up and own up. We've had so many, I'll save Dogwood Dell for you, Chris. But you know, even on the sports side, just we had a couple of years ago, we found out that So students pay usually an athletics fee as part of their tuition. It goes to the athletics department. They get tickets to games or whatever. You know, the Virginia schools have the highest athletics fees in the nation. And a couple of the schools were charging their kids $3,000 a year, money that went to subsidize big athletic programs. And the legislature actually passed a law supporting curbing that. Also in sports, we had the legislature pass a law this year clawing back more revenue from sports gambling. It was a very one-sided sports gambling bill that was written by the companies through their lobbyists, and our reporting turned that around a couple of years in. So, you know, that's the work I will always be proudest of.
That's good, Michael. Yeah, those are all good ones. I'm really proud of the data journalism that we're doing. I think it's how we go about using data to tell stories and, you know, expose trends, I think is really, really crucial. And we did some work with opioid settlement funding last week. We did some great work about pupil funding returning to COVID, pre-COVID levels. We've just done a really good job of data. And I think that's tricky sometimes, but we've made an investment in that. Michael just mentioned the Dogwood Dell story, which is the Richmond police on July 6th had a press conference and said they foiled a shooting plot in Richmond at a music venue. And this was right after the shooting in outside Chicago at the 4th of July parade. We obtained some documents that indicate that the police chief probably did not know where the exact location was. He kind of connected some dots, and we're working through and reporting out exactly how he got that information. So, you know, there's a lot of power in FOIAs, and we do a great job with seeking information, and more coming. We actually have a big FOIA piece coming up pretty soon here. So really great stuff.
I got to do one more because we got a great data-driven story, and it was which college majors make the most money out in the workforce. So like not like hard news, but interesting news. And I want to say it did 25,000 page views that first week. People love that stuff, and nobody else is digging into the data and providing that by college, by major. You know, just something that delighted our readers that day. They wanted that story, and we gave it to them, and we reminded them, like, hey, we're looking out for you in a lot of different ways.
Well, and I think, you know, you say that's not hard news, but I would say we're at a point when we're talking about education right now, whether it is at the local, you know, K through 12 or second or, you know, or the higher education, though, where I think those things are important because a lot of school districts, a lot of states and their college systems are looking at how they do things and that, you know, maybe despite the last 50 or 60 years of our society, maybe pushing everybody to college, as long as you're above a certain, you know, income level, pushing everybody to college isn't always the best answer. And so I think maybe looking at that kind of thing is part of the service that we as journalists can provide to people, because college isn't the answer for everyone.
And that story kind of got at that, you know, that's around that space is kind of the story. So yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I know where I am at, you know, a lot of school districts around here are looking at the way that they have their students ready for graduation, that maybe it's not always, we don't have to make everybody college ready. We've got to make everybody career ready, life ready.
Yep.
And so maybe that is hard news. More than you thought.
That's a great perspective.
Look, I do those things on purpose. I have always said that our industry is not so great at bragging about tooting our own horns. We're really good about it after hours when it's just two or three reporters sitting around at a bar or out to eat, right? And we're going to tell each other about the awesome stories we've written, but we don't always tell the public what we've done and some of the great stories that we do. And we should be better at that. And not always feel guilty that we have to brag. So that's why I do that part.
Agreed.
No guilt here. I watch the athletes do it. I watch to learn and support. If you don't let them know how awesome you are, nobody will.
Exactly. Right. Well, Chris, Michael, I appreciate your time today. This was a fun conversation. I love hearing about the work you're doing, and good luck and keep at it.
You too. Good. I love the podcast. So good stuff.
Absolutely.
Thank you guys. That'll wrap us up for this time. We'll talk to everybody next episode.
The News Nirvana podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your favorite podcast apps. The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Town News. Connect with Town News at townnews.com. The News Nirvana podcast is produced by Fredcast. Think, speak, act.